Welcome to the PW Torch Livecast. I am Wade Keller, editor and publisher of the Pro Wrestling Torch weekly newsletter, chronicling the wrestling industry since the late 1980s, and also PWTorch.com, MMATorch.com, and PWPodcast.com, featuring written summaries and newsworthy and compelling and sometimes shocking quotes from people involved in the wrestling business, either being interviewed on a podcast or hosting their own. It's updated every day with multiple updates. It is absolutely worth your time to check out. That's PWPodcasts.com. We are here, though, on the post-SmackDown edition of the PW Torch Livecast on Tuesday, June 6th, 2017. And I am joined by Pro Wrestling Torch columnist Greg Parks. Greg, welcome to the Livecast once again.
Great to be here once again.
Longtime PWTorch.com readers know Greg for 10 years, or was it 20 years, Greg, covered SmackDown Live for the site.
I think it took 20 years off my life, but it was just 10 years in real time.
There were a few spells of SmackDown that it wasn't quite as newsworthy as you would hope most many weeks. But we are in an era where SmackDown is more relevant with a roster split and exclusive use of many of the big names, including tonight's main event, Shinsuke Nakamura and Kevin Owens. Shinsuke beats Kevin Owens clean in almost exactly 10 minutes. A commercial break in the middle. This was not the showcase that I was hoping for. What were your thoughts on what they did with this main event, Greg, given that they gave it considerable hype leading into the show, but I would argue, I'd contend that they downplayed it, actually, during the show?
Yeah, I was surprised to see, I think, the first ad for the match showed up about 25 minutes into the show. That they were going to have Kevin Owens versus Shinsuke Nakamura on SmackDown tonight, and that surprised me when I saw it for the first time, and I made sure to check the clock. The match, you know, Kevin Owens had his patented house show headlock on for much of what we saw. As you said, the match went 10 minutes, interrupted by a commercial break. So, you know, it's going to get to the point, I think, where a lot of the fans who may not know Nakamura from NXT, from New Japan, are going to eventually say, what's the deal with all the hype around this guy? You know, he does give off that star power. He does give off that aura. But beyond that, we haven't really seen everything he can do. He was unleashed in his first NXT match against Sami Zayn at TakeOver, and we haven't really seen that. His first match on the main roster was against Dolph Ziggler, and he wrestled even with Ziggler, maybe even Ziggler taking more of the match. So it's certainly a different style that he's wrestling on the main roster, likely produced that way. So if you were looking for Nakamura Owens tonight to be this big breakout performance by Nakamura, you were probably sorely disappointed.
Yes, and I was disappointed. I mean, I thought this was an opportunity to really showcase Shinsuke. If Shinsuke is going to win Money in the Bank, I think he needed to have a match that created buzz this week. And instead, they gave that showcase length of time last night to Bray Wyatt and Roman Reigns. And it's as good of a match as you can have when the lead babyface is just kind of doing the same thing, same 3-4 moves over and over again. And it was a good to very good match. But Shinsuke can do a lot more. And I don't know if they're limiting what he does or he's choosing to kind of simplify his style. I had much higher aspirations for what the first Shinsuke Owens match would be. Now, they might think, hey, it's you know, early June. We're 2 weeks out from a pay-per-view. It's not a pay-per-view showcase match. So let's give them, you know, I mean, this wasn't even a house show main event, you know, because they kind of dial it down for house shows. This was, with a commercial break in the middle, like 5.5, 6.5 minutes of action, including, you know, Owens fit in his chin lock. I don't know. Again, it wasn't bad, but I think Shinsuke needed to be great for the reasons you talked about in order to really stand out with fans and viewers who don't know if he's special other than his ring entrance.
Yeah, and I think we're also getting into an era where, you know, you talk about the house show style. I think that we're seeing that more and more with the TV matches, even, you know, they're saving themselves for the special occasions, whether it's pay-per-views, whether it's, you know, maybe even just major pay-per-views. They're saving their bodies, they're saving their top moves for those. And so you get a TV match like a Nakamura versus Owens where your expectations are high and they're kind of just on cruise control. And I think there's something to be said for the guys saving their bodies and not going all out every night, which takes years off your career. But, you know, like we've talked about with Nakamura, eventually they've kind of got to let him loose at some point.
This felt like an occasion where you want to, because I agree, I don't think they should, you know, beat themselves up so much it shortens their careers, but or leads to long-term problems. This just felt like a week that I think they should have gone, they should have given them the time and the space to really do something special, and I don't think they did. Our phone number.
Well, even with the condensed time, you know, because it was a shorter match, they didn't. We've seen some SmackDown, some Raw matches go 20 minutes, go 15 minutes. This one, bell to bell, you know, with a commercial break in the middle, you know, like you said, went about 10 minutes. They could have really let loose for those 10 minutes, those, you know, 7 or 8 maybe that we saw without the commercial break, and really not hurt themselves too much by going all out for that time. You know, it's not all out for 15 minutes. It's not all out for 20 minutes. It's just a 10-minute shorter match than what sometimes we get. And I don't think there would have been anything wrong with letting them go and do their thing in that shortened amount of time.
I think for people who have hyped Nakamura as when you see him, you're going to tell all your friends who aren't watching wrestling anymore, you got to come back, tune in, and watch this guy. He spent the last several years, handful of years, doing that. And that's not the Shinsuke that showed up in NXT, and it's even less so the Shinsuke who has shown up on SmackDown so far. He can be a really good, valuable main event player and look like he belongs. The idea with Shinsuke was he would look like he doesn't belong. He would look like he was something beyond that. And that Shinsuke hasn't shown up yet. So that's my concern. I don't think there's anything Shinsuke has done, including his ring entrance, which is fine, but it loses its power if he's not out there doing something special in the ring. I don't think there's anything he's done at this point where he's changed the equation for whether fans are deciding to tune in or not on SmackDown. And we spent, you know, more than a year anticipating when this would happen. And I mean, I'm disappointed. And I was disappointed tonight. It's not that there's not still hope. I just don't think this was a step in the right direction for a situation that I think is calling for not status quo, but a step in the right direction. And we didn't get that tonight. So yeah, I'm disappointed. In that respect, AJ Styles got his win back, Greg. Beat Dolph Ziggler. This also a disappointingly short match. I thought this was going to be a show built around, you know, two showcase matches, given the length of time they gave to some matches on Raw this week and recently on other shows. And we got 7 minutes with a commercial break, so about 3.5 minutes total of action. Styles getting a clean win with a Styles clash. Other than Ziggler leaning over, patiently waiting for Styles to sunset flip him, I thought everything looked crisp and believable, and it was good. But again, kind of not at the level that is going to, you know, make people go, God, I'm really glad I tuned in tonight. That I'm thinking about as I go to bed tonight.
Yeah, shorter than I expected again. You know, you could argue that they're saving these guys for Money in the Bank, and it's just, they're just kind of preview matches, and they want you to order the WWE Network to see them really go all out for Money in the Bank. But, yeah, this was a SmackDown built around those two big matches. And, you know, if you tuned in for them, you probably left disappointed. Like you said, there was nothing particularly wrong with Ziggler versus Styles. It was just shorter than we've been accustomed to for matches like that. And, you know, it reeked of the kind of 50-50 booking with Ziggler getting the win last week, Styles getting the win this week. And, you know, that's Money in the Bank build-up booking, unfortunately, where WWE's aim is to have you believe every guy in that Money in the Bank ladder match has an equal chance of winning the briefcase. They want to create intrigue and build it around those 5 or 6 or 7 guys who have a shot. And unfortunately, in the build-up, WWE tends to group these guys together in singles matches or tag matches or 6-man tag matches. So because of that, what you see is guys trading off wins, so they're all even heading into Money in the Bank. And it looks like that's what we're seeing with Ziggler and Styles.
I don't want to give a thumbs up as I'm complaining a little bit, that I thought the Nakamura video package was really well done. I thought that the imagery of an artist painting a canvas, and then in the end it's an image of Nakamura, and showing with the video, special video effects, and bouncing back and forth between his strong style signature moves and his ring entrance, I thought that all worked well. And I thought that was a positive on the show, and whoever put that together deserves a cheer and a pat on the back and a New Day ice cream bar.
Do we have those yet? Are they a thing yet?
I don't think so. But no. I still don't quite know if I want to buy an ice cream bar for people who lick their hands and then spank their opponents in the ring. But we'll see how that goes. We're going to go to our first break. You can get in line on the phone banks if you want to join the show. The number is 515-605-9345. Greg, I'm hearing a ton of rustling on your phone today, and I think the listeners are too. I don't know if you can control that or mute it or something, but yeah, I'm hearing a lot of.
I'll do what I can.
Cool. Excellent. Our phone number, 515-605-9345. That's 515-605-9345. I wished upon a star for no more rustling, and it worked. Yet Byron Saxton is still a commentator on Raw, Greg. So I'm luckier than JBL. Give us a call, and you can also email us, pwtorchlivecast@gmail.com. That's pwtorchlivecast@gmail.com. We'll be back right after this commercial message. Do you shop at Amazon.com? If so, do you know there's a way for you to support the PW Torch Livecast without doing anything different other than starting your shopping at pwtorch.com/Amazon? When you go to pwtorch.com/Amazon, click on the Amazon link and you land at the Amazon homepage. But anything you buy on that shopping trip, we get a commission for. It's a way to throw a few extra quarters, maybe a couple bucks in the tip jar, as a way to say thanks for what we do here at the PW Torch Livecast. So next time you're about to shop at Amazon, don't type in AMAZ. Stop right there and type in pwtorch.com/Amazon. That's pwtorch.com/Amazon. A free, easy way to help support what we do here at the Livecast. Thank you. All right, we are back. Don't forget, you can buy a PW Torch Livecast t-shirt. Just go to pwtorchlivecast.com, and on the homepage, you can see our fashionable gray t-shirt with the PW Torch Livecast logo, and just click on that. There are four designs in total, though, and you can choose among them and buy them. They come in, like, quadruple small through extra quadruple large, everything in between. Check it out and see if you want to wear your Livecast t-shirt at the next wrestling show you go to, and maybe you'll bump into another Livecast listener and become really good friends, and who knows where that will lead. So check it out, pwtorchlivecast.com. Click on the t-shirt link on the homepage. I'm joined by Greg Parks, Pro Wrestling Torch columnist, and we are talking tonight's SmackDown. We focused on primarily on Shinsuke Owens in the first segment, and then a little bit on AJ and Ziggler. Greg, we have an email from John M. from Ripon, California. He is a VIP member. He said, good evening, Wade and Greg. Just a few thoughts on SmackDown. Maybe you can expound on these. I enjoyed the women's segment. I'm looking forward to the match. As of right now, they all come across as legit contenders to win. One observation, Becky is by far the most popular female on both rosters. She has the popularity I thought Becky would have. Greg, your thoughts on that. If Becky's the most popular, it's not because she's been given this post-superstar shakeup opportunity to shine. But I do think in the ring, she's a much more natural babyface than Charlotte at this point. And I do think she does stand out. And, I mean, just Charlotte post-babyface turn has been blah. And I kind of agree with what John's saying about Becky.
Oh, yeah. Tonight especially, you could tell that the crowd was behind Becky more than any of the other babyfaces. And, you know, when Charlotte was announced, they would just kind of woo the crowd, almost like just a natural reaction to the daughter of Nature Boy Ric Flair. I don't think that they were necessarily behind her as a babyface character. You know, when she initially came onto the scene as a babyface and then turned heel, I remember the thought was, wow, she is such a natural heel. I can't believe WWE debuted her as a babyface. And now here we are with her having turned babyface, and it's like, this just doesn't seem like it's working. So I don't think anyone should be surprised that she's not as good of a babyface as Becky Lynch. You know, some people are more naturally gifted as babyface, some as heels. And with Charlotte, it does kind of feel like they're trying to plug a square peg into a round hole. But on the other hand, I think, you know, Charlotte has been sort of reticent to accept her babyface-ness. You know, she's not the person, but the character. You know, she hasn't gone all in with this group. You know, they're kind of going against this welcoming committee, this heel group, but it's almost like she hasn't fully bought into Becky and Naomi. She just happens to be on their side in this fight. Although as each week passes, she does seem to be reacting more and more as a babyface. So, it's almost just a numbers game where they needed another babyface, and Charlotte was the one they chose to turn.
As far as the Lana, the reintroduction of Lana, John didn't ask about that, but I'll bring it up here since we're talking about the women's segment. It ended with Naomi being upset enough by Lana grandstanding and challenging her that she said, yeah, I want to take on Lana at Money in the Bank. She said she wishes she was in Money in the Bank itself, but if she can't, she wants to wrestle Lana, and she even offered to put the title up to entice Shane into booking the match, and Shane did book the match. So Lana, who was second to Rusev, not a wrestler, and has been dancing in vignettes, now, because Naomi asked for it, leapfrogged everybody else to get a title shot on the same show where everybody else is having to fight in a Money in the Bank match and put their bodies at great risk in order to get what Lana got by simply strolling to the ring and obnoxiously or aggressively asking for something and the champion giving it to her. It's a little bit of a mess in that sense. I like when title shots are not just handed out, and I understand, you know, Naomi asked for it, and Shane was like, all right, it'll be a good match on a show. So you can kind of shrug your shoulders and go, hey, whatever. He added a match to the pay-per-view. But I think it undermines the notion that a title shot is valuable. You know, I don't think you give a chance to, I don't know, the Sacramento Kings to face the winner of the Cleveland Cavaliers Golden State Warriors series just because they asked for it in a way that upset, you know, the coach or the commissioner. You don't just then go, okay, after the finals, we're just going to give this opportunity to the Kings. No, the Kings don't get one because they didn't win enough games. So I'm against it. I think there was enough of an attraction of Lana just having a match and people being curious about that. I think you protect the value of what it takes to earn a title shot in WWE, and Shane takes a stand and says, I'll give you the match, but there's absolutely no way I'm handing over a title shot to somebody who hasn't won a match ever on SmackDown.
I think that would have been more palatable if you do Lana versus Naomi at the pay-per-view in a non-title match. And it's interesting because I think you could make the argument that the Money in the Bank match and the briefcase is more valuable than Lana's one-on-one title match, because the winner of the Money in the Bank match can utilize that contract whenever they want. They can cash it in after a hard-fought match by Naomi and have the advantage there rather than a straight-up one-on-one title shot. What's going to be interesting to me is if they have Lana wrestle next week, because Lana is not necessarily accomplished in the ring. So do they have her go over a jobber next week just to kind of give fans a taste and have her get a victory, so at least there's some semblance of, okay, you know, she dominated this match, and now let's see if she can do the same with Naomi? Or does WWE, are they in like full protection mode where they don't want her to wrestle at all before the Money in the Bank pay-per-view, because that would be kind of, you know, finding out the Emperor has no clothes a little bit, that maybe her in-ring work doesn't warrant a title match against Naomi, and then all of a sudden the anticipation for that match goes down. So I'm kind of interested to see what they do with her next week.
I am too. What did you think of the lack of mention of Rusev? They just sort of didn't really make a big deal out of, well, what does Rusev think of her being a wrestler? I feel like fans who don't follow Lana's history, who watch SmackDown, are going, whoa, wait a second. Did I miss this whole chapter in her transition to a wrestler?
I wasn't surprised, because this character does feel completely different from the character who was accompanying Rusev to the ring. And I was actually surprised that they didn't have her ditch the accent. I thought this would be a complete 100% repackage, and the fact that they didn't mention Rusev tonight, especially on commentary, I think goes to that full repackage. So I'm surprised that they didn't have her drop the accent, especially because she can be so in and out with it sometimes that it would be almost more advantageous to WWE to just not have to have her worry about that in the promos.
Yep, yep. All right, back to the email from John. He says, the Fashion Files New Day segment was so bad, but it made me laugh. It wasn't This Is My Life bad by any means. Pretty corny, but I did have a few guilty laughs. That's the boat I'm in. I do not know why. I feel a little guilty, and it breaks a lot of like narrative rules, and yet I got a kick out of it, and it's sort of a guilty pleasure. And when they've done a couple of them that I didn't think were good, I said so. There's something about New Day crossing paths with Breezango and the ridiculousness of New Day walking from a bright, colorful hallway, just like the Wizard of Oz in reverse, into the black and white Kansas world, and then noticing that suddenly they were black and white. I got a kick out of that. I got a kick out of the fact that Breezango couldn't wrap their brains around the fact that New Day couldn't hear their thoughts, even though they can hear each other's. And some of the dialogue was good too. Greg, what did you think of that? Did you enjoy it and feel guilty, or something else?
I think on the whole, I've enjoyed them all to a certain extent. Breezango they're so over the top with it. You know, they're almost, winking along with the audience at how cheesy it is. And I think it was interesting tonight to see New Day. Really, they've always been the jokesters, and here they were playing the straight men to Breezango backstage. So it was a little different role for New Day to be in that situation, and I think it was fun to see their reactions to guys that are even more over the top cheesy than they can be sometimes.
What do you think is the future for the Breezango act? Are they able to like pull this off for a while and keep doing Fashion Files indefinitely, or is this kind of a series of vignettes that will just lead to them, settling it as wrestlers? I mean, or is that just to be determined?
If we know anything about WWE, they'll take the Fashion Files and beat it like a dead horse, until it's long past its expiration date. Because when WWE finds something that they do where the reaction is genuine laughter and people genuinely find it funny, they tend to ride it into the ground. I think any exposure for Breezango at this point is a good thing. They were lower than Ascension on the totem pole not that long ago, and they've hit on something here with the Fashion Files, and they're over because of it. The reactions that they're getting from the live crowd speak to that. So, they may never be anything more than a lower card tag team, but this gets them on TV every week. This gives them something to do.
Another tag team division question from John. The Usos are really finding their groove as heels on the mic. I hope they keep the titles for a while. New Day as champs has been done. Overdone. Greg, do you agree with that?
Yes, I do. I think the Usos have done a really nice job. I think at this point, even though we've seen it before, the Usos and New Day does feel fresh, because the Usos especially are in a completely different position than they were the first time around when they faced New Day many moons ago. And New Day feels like a fresher act. They're in a different situation here on SmackDown than they had been on Raw. So different scenery. They've been off TV for a while. So, sometimes that's enough to freshen up an act. When an act gets stale, you don't have to completely repackage them. Take them off TV for a while, maybe switch brands, and they have a way of feeling refreshed. And I think that's another advantage of this roster split, is you can do that with guys when they've sort of run their course on one brand, you can trade them or superstar shakeup or whatever reason you need to get them to the other brand. And just by being in a different environment, sometimes that's enough to freshen these guys up.
All right, very good. And he said, why the 50-50 booking with AJ and Dolph? Did Vince regret last week's Dolph win? Greg, what is your theory? We talked about AJ Dolph earlier, but what's your theory on the decision to have AJ lose to Dolph and then have AJ win clean in 7 minutes a week later? To me, it's 50-50 booking, but it's sort of at its worst in the sense that last week's decision now seems to have served no purpose. Dolph has no bragging rights left that he's got AJ's number. He's now lost clean in less time than it took AJ to beat him. AJ lost only when he slipped on the top rope. AJ beat Dolph clean, but AJ still lost to Dolph. I think they accomplished nothing. I would have rather had Dolph today come out and claim, you know, like that he twisted his ankle on his way to the ring and didn't wrestle AJ. But then spent all his time on Talking Smack Tonight saying, hey, I got a winning streak against AJ that's never going to end. And the counter argument by Renee would be, yeah, because you're never going to wrestle him again because you're going to fake injuries. And Ziggler would get all upset about it. I mean, like, give him something to do with a win over AJ. You don't have AJ lose and have it not serve a larger purpose. And I think the purpose was Ziggler's in Money in the Bank. Let's make him seem relevant by having him beat AJ. But, oh, my God, we got to give AJ his win back the next week. Well, you're not owning anything you're doing then. It's the worst 50-50 booking example that I can remember. I really don't get it, Greg. Talk me off the ledge on this. Is there another way that this makes sense?
Well, I talked about it earlier how it's all to make sure everybody's even heading into Money in the Bank. And I think that's a big reason why they did it in this case. But I think to your point, one of the biggest detriments of 50-50 booking is in the big picture, when you look back on the story of Dolph versus AJ heading into Money in the Bank, it basically makes that first Dolph-AJ match completely moot. And the second one as well, because we're sitting here now a week after that first match and a few, you know, an hour after their second match, and the results in the grand scheme of things don't mean anything because we're back to where we started before they even had their first match, where they're sort of on even footing. So, and I don't know how many fans do this, but you look back and it's like, well, I sat through almost 15, 20 minutes total of Styles Ziggler matches, and in the end, none of the results really meant anything because they cancel each other out. And I think that's a terrible thing to think when you've sat through matches. Yeah, they might have been good and they might have been enjoyable, but ultimately, it's a symptom of WWE and their tendency to have match results not mean anything. And I mentioned this on Twitter during the show, is every match, the announcers make a point as to the emphasis on building momentum heading into a match or heading into a pay-per-view. And since when was winning a match not good enough? Since when is it about building momentum and not winning the match? Like, that's theoretically, those two should go hand in hand. You can't build momentum without winning a match, one would think. But it's WWE's choice to emphasize that building momentum rather than, hey, AJ Styles is trying to win this match in order to build momentum for the Money in the Bank title match. And I think, you know, that combined with this 50-50 booking specifically in Styles versus Ziggler really lessens the impact of match results.
Yeah, I get what you're saying. I think it's a real astute point that the winning a match should not be a means to another end. It should be the end. You're trying to win. You're trying to win a game. Now, I guess maybe if you were to use a sports analogy, you could say that you know, two teams in the NFL, any league, who have a playoff spot wrapped up, now are no longer playing. Let's say they've even won their division and there's nobody even close. The pennant race is over, and whoever is so far ahead in the final week of the season that they could win other games, lose other games, the standings stay the same. They're going to make the playoffs and have home advantage. So now winning is about building momentum, not about something else. And I guess that might be where they're coming from, but I do think they say that so much And it does make it seem like, well, God, doesn't a win, don't you want a winning record? Don't you actually, you know, want to have, as Gorilla Monsoon would say, you know, go to the, or Dusty Rhodes too, go to the pay window and collect a bigger paycheck because you won. That should be inherent in the way that they tell their stories too. So.
And I think if you wanna focus on building momentum, Wade, I think a perfect example of maybe building momentum but not have it coming out with a victory and those two being mutually exclusive, we had a great example tonight of Mojo Rawley versus Jinder Mahal. Jinder Mahal is the WWE champion. Mojo Rawley is the guy who won a Battle Royal and, as he even made mention, hasn't really had a lot to do lately. So if you're Mojo Rawley, you can kind of build momentum by not necessarily beating the WWE champion. I think that would be way too much to bite off for Mojo. But if you could take the champ to the limit, go 10 minutes with the champion, get a few near falls, and still come out on the losing end, I think if you're Rawley, you kind of take that and you kind of build that momentum into something more to where winning a match and building momentum is mutually exclusive. But so often WWE uses building momentum as being a synonym of winning a match, and it's just really confusing to me.
All right, well, I want to talk more about Mojo and what they did with Jinder today after the break, and we'll also take calls and more emails. So if you're on hold, stay on hold. We'll get to you, some of you at least. We got a lot of people on hold after this break. We know you're a pro wrestling fan because you're listening to the PW Torch livecast. There's a good chance you're also a fan of the UFC and all of mixed martial arts. And if so, we hope you'll check out our sister website at MMATorch.com, covering the news of MMA every single day with breaking news, exclusive analysis, an array of columns, live event coverage, flashbacks, and so much more. Check it out. That's MMATorch.com or download the free MMA Torch app in the iPhone and Android app stores. That's MMATorch.com. We are back. If you're not a VIP member for PW Torch, go check out full details at pwtorch.com/govip. A new feature with VIP membership is the afternoon news update, Monday through Friday. I've been doing afternoon news updates on the Wade Keller Hotline in addition to the post-Raw and post-SmackDown reviews and rundowns, which I'll be doing after this livecast, by the way, running down SmackDown start to finish. If you missed the show, I'll tell you the essentials of what happened, detailed recaps of the important things, and also sprinkling my analysis throughout. And that's a VIP exclusive, along with the weekend Ask the Editor features. And if there's big news, I'll cover news too. But I answer mailbag questions on the Wade Keller Hotline on weekends. So that's new. So if you're in the United States, when you leave work, there's a news update waiting for you. 10 to 20 minutes of the day's news with some analysis and opinion thrown in. And also new is Sean Radican's WWE Future Past. That's the name of a new show. He's done three episodes. They're about 45 minutes each. And he and a rotation of guest expert analysts break down three wrestlers. Two of them are prospects on the indie scene who they think have a chance to make it to the main roster. And they'll tell you about them, what their strengths are, what their weaknesses are, what their upside is. And they also, on the PW Torch VIP website, have links to one match from each of the wrestlers that they recommend that you watch. And they talk about it and analyze that. And then the third wrestler is somebody on the WWE roster, NXT or the main roster, who've already made it, but have a history on the indie scene, and they review their indie past. And Sean Radican and his co-hosts have watched these wrestlers' careers from the very beginning, and they'll tell you things about them that you might not have known. You probably didn't know, because they follow their careers so closely, and they'll catch you up on their past, whether it's Austin Aries or Kevin Owens, along those lines. People on the main roster, they will... They'll cover their indie past. It's a really cool feature. We've run it 3 weeks in a row now. It'll run more. We've got more of them coming up. It's one of the many VIP exclusive shows. There's about 15 or so every week. That's not a misstatement. There's about 15 VIP exclusive podcasts every week for VIP members that come with a VIP membership, not to mention ad-free access to our website and instant access to nearly three decades of our archives, including hundreds of retro radio shows from the 1990s, from the early 90s through the Attitude Era. So go check out details, pwtorch.com/govip. And you can sign up in about 2 minutes. The sign-up form is mobile-friendly, and we'd love to have you on board as a member. Give it a try if you haven't, and come on back if for some reason you were a member, and let your subscription lapse. We've got a lot of cool stuff coming up, including Samoa Joe, Brock Lesnar. Last night, Kevin Eck, who is a former creative team member with WWE, he spent 3 years there several years ago, and he's now a wrestling columnist with Sporting News, and he was a fantastic guest analyst yesterday. He's normally been on Interview Thursday, and I've interviewed him about his time in WWE, but we've also always talked about current events. This is the first time he joined me as an analyst right after a wrestling show, and he just did a stellar job, not only analyzing the show, but incorporating concrete examples of what Vince McMahon is like behind the scenes and how that affects how he's looking at the product today. Really good details on Sister Abigail and what Bray Wyatt's original vision was for that. A lot of firsthand expert insight from Kevin. Check it out. If you didn't listen to last night's post-game show, go check it out. And we had a lot to say about that stellar Samoa Joe Paul Heyman segment too. So it looks like it's going to be a really cool summer with Money in the Bank. And yes, Great Balls of Fire. Joe Lesnar is looking good. And the return of John Cena, they announced that tonight, that he'll be back on SmackDown on July 4th in, I believe it was Phoenix, Arizona. And then whatever is in store for us with SummerSlam, perhaps the return of Braun Strowman. So it's going to be a hot summer, and we hope you'll join us on the VIP side of things so you don't miss out on everything else that we and the whole Torch crew do on a daily basis, 365 days out of the year. Check it out. That's pwtorch.com/govip. Greg, I said before the break that I want to talk a little bit more about Mojo. John brought up a lot of topics in his email, but they're good ones, so I'm gonna hit another one here. He said, I might be in the minority, but I liked Mojo's promo. I'm not a huge fan of overhyped Mojo, but when he seems more serious, I can get behind him. Maybe he can get a little more TV time and tone things down. I'm totally with John on this. I absolutely like Mojo when he's talking like a normal human being and not being all hyper. Of course, I didn't like when he's in the ring, you know, going, he's not hype, trying to get the fans to chant that, which is lame-o, as Breezango would say. But I did like his promo backstage, Greg, and I think there's something there that, if it can be corralled a little bit, can be a good, you know, upper-mid-card babyface role player, a little bit of a gatekeeper. I think there's something there, and I like the case that he made with Shane. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I did too. I thought it was a good job by Mojo when the situation called for it to kind of tone it down. And this was a situation that called for it. He was, I don't want to say desperate, but he really wanted Shane to understand that, hey, he won the Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royal, and Shane really hasn't had much for him, and he feels like he's deserved that opportunity. So I think this was the right time in that promo for him to dial it down a little bit. But ultimately, when you talk about his actions and what he does in the ring, he is the hype machine Mojo Rawley. And I guess we can't expect him to take that down several notches while he's in the ring.
All right, let's go to the phone lines. And let's begin with, let's see if Darrell is awake this week. Darrell, I went to you last week. I thought I heard some snoring.
Yeah, I'm sorry about that.
That's all right. What have you got for us today?
How you doing today?
Good. Thanks for calling.
Not too much. A little bit. I like what they did. Continue to make Nakamura feel like a special thing. I wanted to ask you guys, what did you feel about Jinder Mahal and the promo? Still kind of rugged and sound like he got a cold, but what you feel about that?
Yeah, Greg, I wonder if it's going to be a perpetual cold with Jinder. His voice just doesn't project as he talks into the microphone, and I feel like I've got to listen so carefully to hear him or turn up the volume. It doesn't have a lot of punch behind it. I mean, his body language sometimes is a little cartoonish and over the top. I think he's dialed that down a little bit. I think you should leave that for the Singh brothers to be a little kind of jumpy and over, you know, cartoon. Not cartoonish, but a little more, you know, energizered, over the top.
Animated?
Animated, thank you, yes. And Jinder should be more dignified and arrogant and not looking like he's, I'm trying to be a heel, so I'm going to frown and snarl. Don't do what people who don't watch wrestling think bad guy wrestlers do, because that's what Jinder's been doing. do what wrestling fans actually are attracted to, which is something that's more grounded and more real and less playing to the last row of the building. You're on television, it's high def, and the camera zooming in on you. You don't need to insult us by going to 12 on the 1 to 10 scale of facial expressions. I think he's better about that now. It's something Gregory Helms talked about with Steve Austin a couple weeks back about gender, and I was thinking the same thing. I mean, there's a lot of people saying that. So I think he's better in that regard. What do you think of his presentation and the match, the win over Mojo, and then his promo afterwards, Greg?
I liked the match more than I was expecting to. You know, you take a guy like Mojo Rawley and you put him in there with a guy like Jinder Mahal, and your expectations are pretty low. But I liked what I saw of the match. They kept it short, which was smart, which it needed to be for a number of reasons. I think the presentation of Jinder is about the best we can expect from WWE. And I think, you know, they're doing something right because WWE is getting the desired reaction from the fans that they want. They're booing him. They're not sitting on their hands. They're not cheering him as a sign of respect for a guy who came from nowhere and is now champion, which, you know, sometimes the fans tend to do for wrestlers, babyface or heel. They're booing him. And, you know, that could be chalked up to the xenophobic nature of the gimmick. But whatever they're doing, and for whatever reason, it's working. He's getting heel heat. And the presentation, you know, with I think the music is really good. I think the Singh brothers are a fine addition. They're certainly not taking away anything from Jinder. I think they're if anything, adding to him that he is important enough to have two guys sort of take care of business for him. That sets Jinder up to be you know, the Maharaja as he builds himself. So presentation wise, I think they've done a really nice job, and I think the crowd reaction is on the high end of what they could expect for taking a guy from relative obscurity within WWE to making him champion. And I think his in-ring work at this point, you know, that's going to be something that's debated. I think passable is probably what people will accept and what WWE will accept. I don't think we're looking for him to come out and have 4-star matches. But I think as long as he can hold his own, that's probably enough. You know, we're going to be heading into Money in the Bank here where he gets a rematch with Randy Orton, but he's not going to be asked to carry the water in that match because you've got two Money in the Bank matches, which historically have really propped up those pay-per-views as far as in-ring quality goes. I don't know about the women. It's the first ever for that, but certainly the men's Money in the Bank is usually the best match on the card. So he's not going to be asked to carry that pay-per-view from an in-ring standpoint. So that may take a little pressure off of him. Plus, he's been in this position before. This is now his second main event pay-per-view match, and you know, the jitters or, you know, the unfamiliarity working with Randy Orton for that length, although I think they worked some house shows beforehand, all those are gone. So he may have a smoother time at Money in the Bank for those reasons as well.
Last week I noted in my analysis of the SmackDown ratings that all is not well since Jinder won the title. Like, I think some people have been saying, hey, it's going well. You know, the crowd's reacting to him like he belongs and all that. But if you look at the SmackDown ratings, and again, there can be other factors at play here, but I couldn't isolate any that jumped out more than this. And since the week after Jinder won the qualifying match to become number one contender, SmackDown's advantage over the ratings last year when they were pre-taped disappeared. So all year, through the week that Jinder became number one contender, SmackDown was notably ahead in the ratings on average of what they did the year before. And in the week since, that advantage has been wiped away. They're now drawing only what they drew last year, despite having exclusive use of 40% of the roster and being live on Tuesdays instead of pre-taped. They've lost that advantage. Is that all Jinder's fault? Maybe not. Maybe it's not at all. Maybe it's significantly so. That's up to everybody to decide, but there's nothing else that correlates with that loss of the advantage. Raw has been well below almost every week this year. Well below. 15-20% below where they were a year ago. SmackDown was ahead. That lead is gone since Jinder became the centerpiece heel on this show. And again, I'm putting it out there for consumption and interpretation, but my take on it is it should raise some concern as far as that goes. But I also don't know that not being able to have four-star matches is okay for a main eventer in 2017. One of the defenses of Roman Reigns, even though he's getting booed out of buildings and Vince is having a mess with audio and post-produce, boos out, and all of that, it's not like they love the reaction he's getting. They say that, but it's BS. They don't, otherwise they won't mute the mics live and edit stuff afterwards. This isn't what they want. It's better than no reaction. That's true. But the best reaction, and the one they're really going for, is Roman being beloved and cheered by everybody. And that's not happening, and they're a little embarrassed by it, even though they won't admit it. But Roman has four-plus star matches. He has four-star matches regularly. And, or, you know, 3.5 to 4.5 star. You put him in there with a good worker, and he's going to have a really good match, even with a very limited moveset and kind of a, you know, video game wrestler approach to always kind of doing the same sequence over and over. There's a part of the crowd that's eating it up, and the matches ultimately are really good. Jinder hasn't done that yet. And I think that's important to be able to do that, period. Much less if you have been portrayed as a jobber for several years. Much less if you've never delivered a main event quality promo. And he has yet to do that. He's got some things going for him. Maybe he's right at the bar where you're like, you know, okay, let's see. And I think that's where most people are. They're like, all right, it's going well enough. I'm not just saying what a disaster. This is horrible. They need to pull the plug. But I wouldn't say that I've seen enough yet, or I would say, oh yeah, I mean this was you know, he's doing well, and this was a good decision by Vince. I think the jury is still out, and there is far from definitive information or metrics or anything, subjective analysis of his performance. I don't think you can make a case that Jinder has really earned this push yet. He hasn't completely flopped, but he hasn't earned it yet. Greg, any thoughts on that?
Well, I would just say, as far as the ratings goes, I think what's interesting about that is I never felt like an episode of SmackDown was completely devoted to Jinder Mahal. You know, they had the championship celebration and all that, but even that was shorter than I think what you would normally see even on Raw. So while he's been the centerpiece heel of SmackDown, I never felt like an entire episode of SmackDown was built around him. Like, people are tuning out because he's in 3 or 4 segments or anything like that. So I think that's the interesting thing to me with the ratings, is they may have gone down since he became the number one contender, and maybe that idea just turned people off. He won the championship.
That's what I'm contending.
Yeah.
Because it's sort of like, okay, you know, like if your, I'll use a sports analogy. If your team fires a coach you like and hires a new coach, and that coach you just hated because he used to be on a team, and you don't think he's good, and he's bad with the media, and he you know, you're just not a fan. It can kind of turn you off to the team. And if you've got kind of a take it or leave it attitude about following that team, and you like the old coach, or you like the assistant coach who you wish got promoted, and instead they hired some guy out of nowhere, you know, or not out of nowhere, but a guy who you don't like, it can turn you off. I mean, and I think there's again, I'm not necessarily like 100% behind that it is Jinder and this is why, but if it is because of him, you're right. It's not because it's just become the Jinder Mahal show, but it's sort of like, you've got to be kidding me. Vince is doing this when he's got AJ and Shinsuke and Owens, and now they're playing backup to Jinder, who's now the starter. I think there's a chance that it's just sort of like, ah, God, if I'm going to watch a show now, I don't know that I want to tune into a show that's going to be built around Jinder. And I think there might almost also kind of project the idea that if Jinder's a top guy, no matter how much he cheats to win and how much he's not a dominant part of the show, he's being pushed in a way that sort of says SmackDown's the B show. Because I don't think anybody believes Jinder would be the world champion on Raw. So I think some of those things are in play. It's a good point you bring up, and it's what you said at the end. I think it's just a sense of, oh, God, tell me when this is over, and I'll come back.
Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah. All right. Let's go to our next break. When we come back, more calls. So give us a call. If you have called and haven't pushed 1 on your Touchstone phone, I'm trying to remember to say that. Push 1 on your Touchstone phone or else you will not be eligible to be brought onto the show. So if you do call, 515-605-9345. be sure to push 1 on your Touchtone phone, as area code 913 just did right this very second. So good job. All right, so we'll be back right after this message.
Do you love Pro Wrestling Torch? Then we've got another show just for you, Ring Rust Radio.
Ring Rust Radio breaks down the hottest topics and news from around the wrestling world, including WWE Raw, SmackDown, and pay-per-views, TNA, Lucha Underground, New Japan, and indie wrestling. Add in interviews with the biggest names in the industry, like Stone Cold Steve Austin, Shawn Michaels, Bret Hart, Paul Heyman, Kurt Angle, and many more. And Ring Rust Radio has something for everyone.
Check out the show on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play. Interact with us on Twitter at Ring Rust Radio and email us at ringrustradio@yahoo.com.
All right, we're back. You can follow me on Twitter at TheWadeKeller. Follow our brand at PWTorch. Follow our sister brand at MMATorch and our new revamp site at PWPodcasts. Be sure to check out PWPodcasts.com for the latest in-depth written recaps, summaries, and analysis of wrestling personality-hosted podcasts. Eric Bischoff, what did he say about his experience on Table for Three? How would he have booked his WWE debut differently? And why did that WCW NBC deal that was a headline in the Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter one week, why did that fall apart? You can listen to the show, but you don't have to. You can read the recap and then decide if you're going to listen to it. And the whole recap is just posted tonight over at pwpodcasts.com. Also, details on the latest Edge and Christian Pot of Awesomeness with Natalia, talking about her favorite opponents and her biggest regrets. John Morrison also on to talk about his new film. Matt McCarthy's We Watch Wrestling podcast is up, talking about current events in wrestling and why some WWE skits end up so terrible. That's insight from an ex-creative team member, Matt McCarthy, a friend of this very live cast. Also, What Happened When? Tony Schiavone talks about WCW mayhem when Russo and Ferrara took over booking. Plus, a recap of Cheat Pete, talking about current events in wrestling, Colt Cabana's interview with Larry Zbyszko, Sam Roberts' interview with Marty Scurll, the latest Steve Austin Unleashed with a buzz-generating interview with the Brian Kendrick, X-Pac, his latest podcast, that latest MLW podcast, and Something to Wrestle With, featuring Bruce Pritchard talking about King of the Ring 96. I listened to that start to finish on a long car trip last weekend, and it was very good. So you can catch up and read about it on our podcast recap page, plus on our news column, because there's two columns on the desktop site. They all blend together on the mobile site. Quick quotes from Raven on his regret about leaving WCW, his favorite angle, and why he didn't like the Johnny Polo character. It's hard to believe they were the same person. Alberto El Patron says when he'll retire, and he responds to Ryback's stupid comment, as he put it. Jason Jordan makes some newsworthy quotes. Taz says he once turned down a match with Brock Lesnar. Jack Swagger with some real poignant analysis of Jinder Mahal and his sudden push. They were all kind of on the same level a while back. Now Jinder made eventing and Swagger a free agent. Plus he chimes in on the Randy Orton dive debate. And Luke Harper talks about the WWE hometown curse and why he nearly quit the business. Rey Mysterio talks about almost working for Impact Wrestling. Bruce Pritchard says, were any wrestlers clean during the brutal 1980s travel schedule? All kinds of great stuff over at pwpodcast.com. It absolutely is worth your time. Check it out right now. That's pwpodcasts.com. Written recaps and highlights of all wrestling podcasts that are out there. All right, we're back here on the PW Torch live cast. Greg Parks is my co-host on today's program. Greg, how can people follow you on Twitter?
I'm on Twitter at Greg M. Parks.
Excellent. So follow Greg. All right, let's go to the phone lines and go next to, I believe it's Jordan from New Rochelle, New York, but I might be wrong. 914, who is this?
Yeah, it's me, Wade.
All right, cool. Thanks, Jordan. What's on your mind tonight?
So, obviously we had the debut of Lana tonight, but I like how you're talking about Mojo Rawley, how he was, I think so the email said he could get more behind him when he was more serious, but obviously he lost the match tonight. Do you think as we build up to Money in the Bank, we'll see Rusev saying, hey, if I can beat this guy, I'll get inserted into the Money in the Bank match? Because I feel he really got robbed. Cause if you remember, they said I think he may have been going into a storyline with Shane, or he was going to be challenging Orton at Money in the Bank, and now he's just sitting on the side watching as his wife is, like, on TV and everything. Do you think down the road he could possibly be put in that match?
Greg, what do you think?
Well, we've only got one more episode of SmackDown before Money in the Bank, so down the road would have to be next week. I think Rusev has a lot of potential as a heel on SmackDown. And at this point, I think it's best to keep him out of that match. I think putting him in last minute in a match like this, where he's going to kind of get lost in the shuffle, is not really going to do him any favors. I think it's best to kind of let Money in the Bank sort itself out as a match, and then have him come back afterward in the aftermath of that, you know, in the week subsequent to Money in the Bank. I think that's when you want to have him come back. If you had had him return when he said he was going to return and confront Shane McMahon, then I think I would have been okay with it. But at this point, you're pushed up right against the Money in the Bank pay-per-view, and I'd hate to see him be an afterthought, being put in there at the last minute.
All right, let's go next to Evan, a VIP member calling from 317. Evan, what city are you calling from today?
Hey, Wade, I'm calling from Indianapolis.
It's who? Go ahead.
Hey, this is Steve.
Your line was just a little choppy. Where are you calling from? What's your name and where are you calling from? Oh, yeah, we lost him. All right, yeah, it was just a bad connection. All right, well, I'll look for him calling back on the switchboard. And instead, let's go to area code 585. 585, please state your name and where you're calling from.
Hey, man, this is Polly. I'm at the arena.
Excellent. We always like to hear from people at the building or right afterwards. What can you tell us?
First of all, I got to tell you guys that I spend every day listening to you guys. I really appreciate everything you do. You put a lot of work into what you do, and it's great stuff. Thank you for the hours and hours of entertainment. The first thing I want to do is thank you, Wade. You're the best, man.
Oh, thanks, Paul. Really appreciate it. Appreciate the kind words.
I actually more have a question for you. Rochester has not had a live TV event in 7 years. I want to know how we did on TV. Were we okay? Were we loud? Were we boring?
Greg, what do you think?
Well, I'm kind of biased here because Rochester was my old stomping grounds before I moved to Florida. So, and I probably, if I was still up in Western New York living up there, I probably would be at that show still. So I'm a little biased maybe. I thought they did an okay job. I think, you know, they were into, you know, Becky Lynch specifically. They booed Jinder Mahal. There wasn't a time where I thought, wow, this crowd is really into this show. But I think it was a passable effort.
Yeah, that was kind of my reaction. I threw to you because they didn't jump out. They haven't jumped out, Paul, as either, you know, dead nor creating news. I thought it was actually just kind of a good crowd that didn't make news good or bad.
All right, well, that's a good thing because, I mean, I'm good friends with the guy who runs the arena, and I know he's fighting hard to get this show here, and you know, we're just happy to have it. But as far as the actual show goes, it was a lot of fun. You know, it's funny. I listen to you guys every day, and I you know, I love the points you make. I agree sometimes. I disagree sometimes. But actually being live at the show, you just get to be a kid again, and you get to remember what it's like to just have fun watching a wrestling show. And one other point, if I could make it too, is I just got very, very lucky, and we had front row seats, and it was awesome. But it was so cool. But you know, being actually in the front row, you see it more as a wrestling show, because I go to some indie shows around here. You see it more as a wrestling show than a TV production, and it was seeing that was, or being able to feel that, I should say. Again, like I said, it just felt great, and it kind of made me almost feel bad about all the times I overanalyzed the storylines. I'm like, oh, man, they're just doing their job. They're having fun. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know if that makes me sound right or not, but it's just the way I felt. Randy Orton Jinder Mahal match is going on right now, too, by the way.
Oh, wow, yeah. Well, keep us abreast of that. Here's what I'll say to the idea of, hey, you go to a show, and you just, you know, kind of turn off the analytics and just have fun. And I think there's real value in that. But I don't think that offsets the need to, and I would say, respect the business enough to understand that success doesn't happen by accident. Success happens because smart people who understand wrestling, its history, and how to apply sound booking principles execute the product well, and that's when they succeed. And when they don't, fans suffer, business suffers, and sometimes thriving companies go out of business 2 or 3 years later. So the idea that, well, just let them have fun, don't analyze it too hard, and just let, you know, just smile and nod along, well, that's I respect this industry too much to think good stuff happens by accident. It doesn't. And bad things happen when too many people are nodding along saying, I will buy whatever they offer me. That's when, yes, maybe that's a case for you, but there's people who make choices about what wrestling product they'll watch, and whether they're going to watch some movie on Netflix or an HBO series or another a live sporting event or WWE. And those people make the difference between a successful and unsuccessful year for WWE, and I respect the business too much to think good things happen by accident. And when bad things are happening or things aren't clicking, I like to, and it's the tone we have taken with the Torch from day one back to the late 80s. It's trying to figure out when things go really well, why did it go well? What clicked? What did they do? Booking-wise, character-wise, presentation-wise, production-wise. And if something isn't being done right, that could hurt business. Even if there's not an objective metric where you can just factually say this led to that, when you watch something that doesn't go right or that doesn't seem to be clicking or it's being done for the wrong reasons, it's important to point that out if you are truly a fan and an advocate for pro wrestling and the industry to do well, or for fans to have the best experience possible. And that's where I defend not just sitting back and trusting the pilots who fly the plane to always know what they're doing or being a good job. And I would say, too, sometimes people making those decisions are too close to the politics and you know, they're too close to the trees to see the forest. And sometimes dispassionate people who are not financially tied to the politics or saying yes to people, even if they really want to say no, having people on the outside who are studying things talking about that, I think there's real value in that. And so that's just my little sidebar to what you said, Paul. I the spirit of what you said, go to a show, just have fun. Absolutely. I mean, my God, I've done that. Even in doing the Torch, where I've just not taken notes, just have fun, be a fan. But overall, I think it's important that you don't feel bad if when you're watching something and you think it sucks, you shouldn't feel bad that you're not just eating what they're feeding you. That emotion is important, and it's important that promoters correct course when that's happening with too many people. But Paul, back to you. How is Orton Jinder going?
You know, I can't see it because I had to come out here to be in a quiet area. Hey, man, you make a lot of good points, Wade. You know, that's why you're a pro. I love the mute, unmute. As a radio guy, I can appreciate your professionalism. You the man. I want you to give two notes as being front row. Front row, two things I noticed that I don't think people would even really notice. Number one, I was 5 feet from the announcer booth. Like, I was right in the corner. I was a big fat guy in a green shirt. There, you can see on the table that they have the entire show laid out on paper. They actually have paper notes. And I was trying really hard to get a picture and see it, like, with my eyes and actually read it. But they have, like, it's probably about 5 pages or so. It's just white, you know, just a Microsoft Word document printed out. And you could see the headlines were in bold. You know, it was the segment one or this. But then underneath there'd be 2, 3, 4 bullet points. And I just found that interesting from a production standpoint. And then the one other thing from a production standpoint that I found interesting was the production guys that you never see, you know, we don't see them on TV, the guys working around the ring, they're in and out of underneath the ring all the time. I didn't know that. They're rolling under the ring and rolling back out from under. I don't know what they're doing under there. They have a little monitor under the ring too, and I got a picture of that. I'll tweet it at you. But there's a monitor in the middle of the ring, under the ring, that I guess they're watching to know when it's safe to roll out and roll and not roll out. I don't know, but just fascinating stuff that you notice in where I was versus, you know, watching on TV.
That's fascinating. What else stood out from sitting front row? And did anything? Well, I should ask. Anything happened before SmackDown went on the air? Any matches or anything off air that's worth
noting? Oh yeah. Oh God. So I'm so glad you brought that up because I didn't want to forget this. Luke Harper's a hometown boy here. So they had a 4-on-4 tag team match: American Alpha, Luke Harper, and Ty Dillinger versus whoever. I don't know. But Luke Harper just was huge. I mean, really one of the biggest pops of the night, Luke Harper. And it was great because the hometown curse did not happen. He got the pin, he got the win, and he got to have his couple of minutes in the ring to just soak in the welcome home chant. And they gave him that. Granted, it wasn't on the air, But still, it was nice that they let him have that. So 7:45 until 8 o'clock was the Luke Harper show, and I was really appreciative that they let him have that.
Let me press you for a second as a reporter. Can you remember who they wrestled?
That's funny. I'm not a reporter. I'm a radio dickhead. God, who did they wrestle? They wrestled Eric Rowan. Who are some of the other guys that never make it on? I don't know. It's all SmackDown. All the SmackDown guys you didn't see were all in that.
All right, that we'll go with that.
<We're funny. laughs>
Fair enough.
Hey, thank you, Wade, for having me on. Greg, I didn't know you were a Rochester guy. I like you even more now. I work for the Brother Lee Show, by the way. I don't know if that rings a bell.
Oh, yes, definitely. Every year I go to Buffalo Bills camp at St. John Fisher, and he'd have the booth there. So.
Hell yeah, bro. Come have a garbage plate sometime. I'd love to have you up on the air. Next time you come in, hit me up. I emailed Wade. He has my email. We'll put you on the air.
And hey, Paul.
Sounds great, sir. Thanks a lot.
Paul, when you catch up with who you're at the show
with. Paul,
when you catch up with who you're at the show with, drop me an email if you can, letting me know the opening match, if you can put your heads together, figure that out, and also how the dark match went, or the Orton Jinder match.
It just got out, and it was a loud pop, so I guess I'm going to assume Orton won. It wasn't for the title, but.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
You want me to interview someone real quick and find out who won?
You can just. I figure the pop and the music tells us, but. That's up to you. But for sure, drop me an email. We'll put a report up on the website, too.
Thanks, Wade. Like I said, man, you entertain me every single day, and I'm so appreciative of that. Thank you for doing what you do.
Thanks, Paul. Thanks for taking time to call us and missing the main event to talk to us here on the live cast. That's dedication. Really appreciate it. All right. I want to go back to Evan, VIP member calling from 317. I believe this is you, Evan.
Hello.
Yes. Yes.
Hey, how's it going, Wade?
Good. Where are you calling from?
Hey, Indianapolis. Thanks for taking my call.
Absolutely. Yep, that's what I thought you said when your phone was breaking up. What's on your mind tonight?
Hey, what'd you think about Lana, man? I was watching the reaction, and it was... I don't think that's what they anticipated. What was your take on all that?
I was watching that, and I'm thinking heels and faces are making fun of her, laughing at her. And I was sympathetic to Lana until she threw a little bit of a hissy fit at the end. And then I thought, okay, well, I guess she's supposed to be a heel. But, I mean, yeah, you know, Greg, that's a problem. When you have Lana come out, she's supposed to be a heel. They've done nothing to make her a heel. Maybe she's not supposed to be a heel because Vince has that stupid thing in his head again that somebody planted, which is, oh, just let the women just argue with each other like some housewife show. And that's what the guys want to see, and that's what the women want to see. So we're not going to, you know, even position anybody to be a sympathetic figure. Honestly, I thought Naomi was kind of obnoxious and more often than not. And so I don't really go into next, you know, I don't go into Money in the Bank going, yeah, I really want to see Naomi bring it to, you know, take it to Lana. And I think in pro wrestling, that's where you draw money, is when you get people. It's same in sports. I don't care that much who wins between the Predators and Penguins. I'm less emotionally invested. I'm curious. I like good hockey. I'll watch. But I don't really care that much who wins. Make me care who wins, and I'm going to be DVRing it or building my schedule around it. That's kind of how I feel about Naomi and Lana right now, and I think they should have anticipated that reaction. Greg, your thoughts?
Lana's whole character was that we saw in the vignettes leading up to this was a dancer, and she comes out today, makes her first entrance into the arena, and there's no dancing. It was all very strange. Yes. I don't know. Like you said, is she a heel or face? And if she's a heel, what makes her a heel? There was nothing in those vignettes that made her a heel. I don't know if she's sort of taken Emma's gimmick and she's supposed to be a bad dancer and we're supposed to laugh at her or what. I'm not sure where they're going with her. Maybe it'll get fleshed out next week in whatever they do to build up her versus Naomi at Money in the Bank. But it was kind of odd when you got done with the segment tonight and you're really, you know, you're taking in the reaction from the crowd, you're taking in the reaction from the baby faces and heels who were in the ring when she came out, and you're sort of looking back on the segment and you're trying to decide how you feel about Lana, and there's really not much there as far as whether you fall on the heel side or the babyface side.
Evan, what's your take?
You know, I think about Emma on Raw, and I think about Eva Marie. I think that's the reaction that they expected. And I think it was booked from a perspective of where the heels and the faces were both going to react to this joke. But it got such a tremendous reaction from the crowd that they all kind of looked silly in how they backed it up. I mean, that's just kind of my take on it.
Yeah, I didn't love what they did with Lana. I didn't love Shane granting Naomi the title match. I didn't like Naomi offering a title match. I thought that having both faces and heels snickering and guffawing at Lana made Lana the sympathetic figure, and I don't think that's what they wanted. I think they think people like Lana and Chan for it because they saw it in the whole Rusev act that was going to happen. I don't know what they were going for, and I don't really have like a strong editorial stance on it because I just sort of feel like I got to watch the next 2-3 weeks to see what they're trying to do. But tonight, I was left a little confused. Evan, anything else?
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I heard your take on Mahal earlier. I loved it. I was watching him in my living room, and I loved every second of it. I thought he was great. I thought he had a good presence. I thought he felt like he cared about the title, and that's important to me as
that's
a viewer.
Yep.
The one last thing I want to ask you with is, what's your take on who's going to win the women's Money in the Bank? I'll give you mine real quick, and I'll let you answer. I just think Ellsworth would look way too cool with that briefcase, and I think it's going to be Carmella all day. Well, let me know what you think, man. Appreciate it.
Evan, thanks for calling. Call again. Greg, your pick.
Yeah, what's interesting is that I kind of brought up the same scenario to Pat McNeil on Sunday in our post-Extreme Rules audio show,
yeah.
The live cast. Yeah, and I said Carmella as well, just because, you know, you would think that she would be the darkest horse in this match, maybe Tamina, but Carmella and James Ellsworth, just seeing James Ellsworth toady for Carmella and carry around that briefcase for her, I can picture it in my mind. I can see it happening. And really, Carmella is so low on the totem pole. She's certainly behind Becky Lynch and Charlotte and some of the others on the women's roster, that this is really the only way where she's going to get any kind of credibility or any kind of a title shot in the future is by holding this Money in the Bank briefcase and having that going forward. So, you know, all of those things considered, I think that was my initial reaction Sunday when I talked it out with Pat, and I'm kind of feeling that more and more as this week's gone on.
I would say that I wouldn't rule out anybody, honestly. I mean, I could see Charlotte winning it. I could see Becky winning it. They'll sort of be, okay, you know, if you like them, great. You know, they've got a chance to cash in on a fellow babyface. But that doesn't seem to make as much sense unless they have the title switched to a heel otherwise. So I'm not... I wouldn't put money on Becky and Charlotte. I think it's more likely one of the other three. There's part of me that thinks, and I totally agree, you know, Ellsworth toting it around and stuff, that has the most potential. I wouldn't rule out Natalya. It gives Natalya a chance to maybe cash in and win the championship, and that could be her way to win the title. And it might give her something a little extra. I think they might argue that Carmella and Ellsworth as an act are good enough. They don't need anything extra. And the rationale might be Natalya does need something extra to kind of move her to that next level as an act that they can kind of play off of on TV. And then Tamina is a dark horse, but, you know, it would give her a chance to win the title without having to perform a really, you know, strong one-on-one match. So I would say Charlotte and Becky are probably the ones I wouldn't put my money on, but I honestly can't rule out any of the five.
Yeah, I think the trouble with a match like this in the women's division is because there are so few wrestlers in the division. A lot of them, by holding the title, kind of holding the Money in the Bank briefcase, will sort of feel like been there, done that, especially Charlotte and Becky Lynch. You know, they've had title opportunity after title opportunity. They've had title reign after title reign. And if they get the briefcase, it would feel like more of the same. Natalya, even to a lesser extent, you know, she's gotten title opportunities, maybe hasn't held the championship, but I think it would feel the same way. Whereas with Tamina and Carmella, it would give you the sense of, oh, this is interesting, this is different, this is new, her having this opportunity for when she does cash it in.
Very good. All right, let's go to Sam in the OC next. Sam, welcome to the show.
Hey.
Now,
hey, what's up, Wade? Thanks for taking my call.
Now, are you still going to name your firstborn after me, or is it too late?
No, it's too late. That was a one-night deal, man.
all right.
One.
Fair enough.
By mere minute.
but I appreciate you taking my call tonight.
Sure thing, yeah.
I wanted to ask a question and then make a statement. But first, like, just commenting on the women's division, on the Money in the Bank, you know, I think Carmella would be fun if they gave it to her, but if they gave it to Charlotte, I wouldn't be surprised. And I think an interesting angle they can do is, you know, they can kind of make a game out of it. You know, she's obsessed with being the women's champion, and, like, here she is trying to be this baby face, but yet she's got this briefcase that she knows she can cash in at any moment and, you know, reclaim her title. Can almost kind of be like a Gollum Lord of the Rings kind of thing that, you know, if it was done right, they can kind of stretch that out and it can ultimately lead to her going back to a heel, which is probably where she belongs. But this is what I wanted to ask. And I thought it started last night with watching the Paul Heyman segment and then again tonight. And just the lack of managers, you know, like Paul Heyman was out there last night and I was watching him with my father and he asked me who that was. And I just, you know, I was like, oh, he's like Bobby the Brain Heenan because, you know, my father's old and he would know who Bobby was. And it had me thinking, like, you know, the concept with Paul Heyman works in the sense of the guys who can't, you know, get it done on the mic, you give them a mouthpiece and let them talk for them. And I guess my question is why is there a lack of that? Like, is that done with? Like, that is an old, you know, people will say, like, oh, that's, you know, that's an old part of wrestling or whatever, like, that's passé. But, I mean, can't they just evolve the manager character the same way that everything else in wrestling has evolved? I don't know, just your thoughts on that.
Yeah, well, I'm an advocate for managers. I am a fan and sitting here today in great part because of the brilliance of Bobby the Brain Heenan. And I watched the AWA territory in the late 70s and into the 80s when I was a kid falling in love with pro wrestling because the AWA made best use out of a lot of their talent. That included having mouthpieces for some of the wrestlers who weren't great talkers or just having, you know, a Lord Alfred Hayes. He managed the Super Destroyers and Sergeant Slaughter was under a mask at that point. Sarge could talk, but, you know, Lord Alfred Hayes, I was intrigued by him and his accent and the way that he represented wrestlers. And Bobby was tremendous. And people who grew up in different eras where managers were a big part of the WWF, you know, whether it was Jimmy Hart or Freddie Blassie or Mr. Fuji, and some of them were better than others, but that was a big part of it. And, you know, Jim Cornette was a huge factor in a lot of people becoming wrestling fans in the 1980s, managing the Midnight Express. There's no reason for them not to be around, but in WWE, Vince wants to say we're sports entertainment, we're not wrestling, and there's some arbitrary things that he just doesn't like that he just decides not to do. And one of them is managers, even though he grew up where managers were a big part of things. So Lou Albano, Arnold Scullin, Freddie Blassie, on through Jimmy Hart, Mr. Fuji, and Slick, and on. I mean, they were certainly part of his promoting, but he has moved against it. Part of it is, sometimes managers were cronies of the promoter who were just kept around to keep an eye on things. And so they would play a manager role. They were there to maybe pass word back to management what the boys were up to, as they would call them. I don't like to call them boys because they're grown men, but the term, if you're in the business referring to wrestlers, is the boys. And that would be, oh, yeah, keep an eye on the boys for me, a promoter would say to one of the veteran managers. And that was a case sometimes. I like the idea of sometimes wrestlers don't have the total package. They're really good in the ring. The fans feel a connection with them, but they just can't cut promos. Well, I don't think they should be disqualified from being top draws because of that. So make them a heel and give them a manager. Bobby Eaton and Dennis Condrey were world-class workers, absolutely deserved the careers that they had, but they needed someone to talk for them. And Jim Cornette provided that role. Paul Heyman's brilliance on Monday is not everyone's going to be at Paul Heyman's level, but they shouldn't rule it out. I've been an advocate for Enzo to become a heel manager. I think that's his destiny. I don't know if it's going to be in 2 months or 2 years or 6 years, but I think he can be a good, obnoxious, abrasive heel manager. WWE's gone a different route. They've used it as a way to introduce beautiful women to be at ringside and pay them to be there. I think part of it is just, why are we going to pay somebody who doesn't take bumps and have them make money on the side? Like, we got our choice in WWE of the whole world of wrestlers. We're only going to push people who can talk. Why bother? If we have our choice, because we're not competing with anybody else for talent, we're just going to hire people who can talk. And if you can't, then tough. We're not going to hire a manager to cover for you. So it's a variety of reasons. Greg, do you want to add anything to that or augment what I said?
Yeah, I think managers have their place. You know, WWE, the way they do things now, it is so heavy on the talking side that if you want to be a main event guy, unless you're a special attraction like Brock Lesnar, you've got to carry in-ring talking segments. Not your manager, but you. And WWE is going to want to rely on you to do that on television. Whereas, you know, you might do short interviews with, you know, pre-tapes with announcers backstage in yesteryear. But now it's so much more live in the ring, talking, you know, carrying a 10 to 15 minute segment in front of an audience if you want to be that main event guy. And I think the other part of it is the WWE machine now, from developmental all the way up, you get trained in, you know, they have promo classes where you work on that, because if you want to make the main roster, you have to be good at that, and or at least passable, which is what sometimes we've seen people come up to the main roster when they're not necessarily ready on the mic and they have to learn on the job. But, you know, that's such a big part of developmental now. Whereas, you know, back in the territory days, WWE might like something, somebody from a territory who wasn't necessarily a good promo. Well, they plucked him from that territory. They had to put him right on TV. There was no going through developmental. There was no training them, taking them off TV, or having them wrestle in front of 100 fans in Florida and working on that. You were right onto the main roster. So I think WWE would like to point to their developmental system and say, hey, we don't need managers to talk for our guys that come through here, because we train them in that, and you can be trained in promos.
And they take a non-traditional approach too. Titus O'Neil is essentially, well, he wrestled, he's a player coach, but he's kind of, you know, a little bit in a manager role at this point too. So they like to do unconventional approaches, and, you know, finding the next Paul Heyman, the next Jim Cornette, the next Jimmy Hart. I mean, I think they should always be on the lookout for that, and I think it's valuable. But yeah, I think, Greg, what you said is they're like, hey, if you can't, we've got our system, and you got to become a good promo or else. Anyway, Sam, anything else for us?
Yeah, I like what you guys are saying. I just wanted to say one comment on it. It's just, I feel like it's something that can enhance their product, and I think it's funny that, you know, I love the Authors of Pain down there in NXT. I love those guys. And it's like, you partner him with, you know, Paul, I think it's Paul Ellerby, I'm not sure if that's his whole name, but, you know, you partner him with him like an old name, and it's like when Darren Young, it's like it was, you brought in Bob Backlund, and with Authors of Pain, it's like, I think if you partner them with someone young and someone fresh who was hungry like them, not just a nostalgia name, you know, I think you could just do something like a strong manager that can lead a faction. But anyways, last thing I wanted to say was in regards to last night, you guys were talking about something interesting about, you know, the TV production backstage and, you know, the camera angles and, you know, that whole topic. And one thing that I wanted to say in regards to that is, like, I don't think that thing gets improvement. I wish Kevin was, you know, able to hear it. Like, I don't think that's able to get improvement, because from a production standpoint, they really don't have many options, you know, in the sense of it's this pretend fighting in an arena, and they're trying to provide this backstage element with people that aren't the best actors, number one. And, like, you know, they can't go in there like it's Modern Family with, you know, multiple camera shots, because we'll think it looks stupid, the same way we thought the House of Horrors match was just ridiculous, even though we thought it was ridiculous for other reasons. And so it's like they're not left with many options, in the sense of, like, they could do a GTV, which was really the closest thing to a natural thing, but really their only option, and they would never do it, would be do something almost like the Ultimate Fighter and treat it like a reality show, where, you know, they had multiple cameras back there and they can kind of do confession cams, and, you know, maybe try that like on, like, you know, 205 or the NXT level, because that would be a large transition for them, and they would never do that. Like, you know, that's just a pipe dream. But you guys were talking about that, and, like, I just don't think there's any options, you know, from whether they've looked at it or not.
Yeah,
there's just nothing they can do. You know, like, what could you do there? How can you make it not awkward? You know what I mean? I don't know. I just, that was something that came to my mind. So,
and you're talking about just not awkward in terms of the backstage segments?
You guys were talking about how there was no solution to how awkward the backstage segments are. You're like, oh, you know, it's been that way forever, and, you know, they just don't care, and it is what it is. But, like, I really think there's no option. No way to make that work without making it awkward, unless it was a staged interview and then it was interrupted into something organic.
See, that's
if that would have made sense.
Right, and that's the argument, or that's what I would propose, largely, is have Renee Young or Dasha Fuentes or whomever hold the microphone, and you have an interview set, and you're conducting interviews. And when you need to pull away to show something else that's happening. It can be during an interview. There's a ruckus, and the cameraman turns and shows something else happening, and now you have an explanation for why they happen to go to that shot. The dumbest thing in the world is when they go to a shot that under no circumstances a director would think would make for entertaining TV, and then something, quote, unexpected happens to make the scene interesting. You can absolutely fix that by having a having the idea be that a wrestler backstage starts yelling, get a camera over here, get a camera over here. And Tom Phillips on commentary goes, oh, you know, puts his finger up to his ear and goes, hey, we got to go backstage. Something's going on. And you've got, you know, James Ellsworth yelling at the camera guy, follow me. There's something going on over here. And boom, now you have a reason for the camera to be somewhere that they wouldn't be otherwise. The whole cliche of we're going to show somebody wrapping up a phone call. And then that's when Mojo walks in.
Right.
It's like, that's so stupid. It's like, I don't care what your other options are. That should not be something you ever do. Because if Mojo didn't walk in, and there's no presumption that they knew he was going to walk in, there's no narrative reason to be showing Shane McMahon having a private cell phone conversation where we're going to hear one end of it. It's so stupid. It drives me nuts. Does it make a huge difference? No. It's a straighten your tie type thing. It's annoying. It's unprofessional. It's cheesy. But and there are very simple alternate solutions than having the, you know, but at least they're doing less of there's a camera and two people are plotting and they wouldn't want anyone to know what they're saying, but they are pretending the camera's invisible. That's the worst of worst. And at least they're not doing that these days.
90 seconds.
I understand. I appreciate that.
Yeah, cool. All right, Sam. All
right, well, I appreciate you guys taking my call. Any thoughts on the Charlotte angle with maybe her winning Money in the Bank and like using it to taunt her going back to a heel? That's it. That's all I got. Have a good night, you guys.
Cool, thanks. I hope they consider turning her back heel, Greg. I mean, I don't know that she's going to get interesting as a babyface. I mean, when she talks about her being genetically superior, I mean, why would anyone want to be around her who's another babyface if all she does is talk about if she's better than everybody else? So, I don't know.
Yeah, the problem, you know, we talked about earlier how it's really a numbers game as to why they turned her babyface. And if Lana is supposed to be a heel, you've got now four heels and three babyfaces. You turn Charlotte heel, you've got five heels and two babyfaces. So that becomes a problem unless you turn maybe Natalia babyface, I guess you could kind of do. But you'd have to do something to even up those sides. I don't think it has to be exactly even, but 5 versus 2 is going to be hard to pull off, especially at house shows when they do so many multi-women matches.
And what I would say to that, to WWE, is Charlotte's the most important woman on your roster. Cast her correctly, and then figure everything else out afterwards.
Yeah.
You shouldn't be sacrificing Charlotte because of a number.
10
so
seconds.
That'd be my case. All right, I apologize for the colors we didn't get to, and also the emails. I got to run. I got a newsletter deadline to get to and a Wade Keller hotline to record even before I finish up the newsletter. So I got to run. We just reached hour and a half mark here live, so thank you to our callers. My apologies those we didn't get to. I'll be on the air live tomorrow at 1 Eastern, 10 Pacific with Jason Powell. So you can join us live if you can. If you can't, drop us an email right now with what you wanted to ask us. If I didn't get to your email on this show, I've got it marked for tomorrow's show. So Jason Powell and I can cover that tomorrow. And then Thursday, we have Alex Greenfield returning to the live cast. He's an ex-WWE creative team member. I always enjoy when he's on the show. He's one of my favorite guests to talk wrestling with. He'll be on Thursday with me at 1 Eastern. So that is the rest of the week. Be sure you check out Kevin Eck from last night. He joined me for the Raw postgame show. Be sure to check out Greg and Pat for the Extreme Rules postgame show on Sunday. Greg, any closing words of wisdom from you?
Wisdom? No. Very little left in the day.
All right. Thanks to Greg. Thanks to all our callers. And we'll send you off here with a reminder of our VIP membership and specifically our retro radio feature. Tell you a little bit more about that. This might be the key to you deciding to go VIP among many reasons you should go VIP. Here's one that I think really stands out from the crowd. Some retro radio shows that you might get a real kick out of, including shows that I was a part of back in the 90s. As a PW Torch Livecast listener, you've probably heard me talk about PW Torch VIP membership. One of the great perks about becoming a PW Torch VIP member at pwtorch.com/govip is access to vintage radio shows that are only available with a PW Torch VIP membership. The entire run of the Pro Wrestling Focus radio show that I hosted on KFAN in the early 1990s, over 100 episodes, available when you sign up instantly. Also, on an ongoing basis, we're adding more Pro Wrestling Spotlight radio shows hosted by John Arezzi in New York, which ran from the late 80s through the mid-1990s. These shows have not been heard since they aired originally on New York radio, and VIP members have access to listen to them exclusively as part of their VIP membership. Also, Total Chaos Radio, hosted by PW Torch Livecast Saturday morning wrestling host Jim Valley during the Attitude Era, are also part of a VIP membership, new ones added on a regular basis. These vintage classic radio shows with big name interviews, guest analysts, including me, on a regular basis talking about the news of the day with the hosts, are accessible when you become a VIP member through our ad-free VIP website. You can stream them right on your phone or right on your computer, but also an RSS feed that is accessible only for VIP members via popular apps on iPhone, Android, and even iTunes. Check it out. It's a big perk that comes with a VIP membership. Get details at pwtorch.com/govip. That's pwtorch.com/govip. Have a blast listening to familiar voices from this live cast talk about wrestling from the 1990s through the Attitude Era exclusively as a PW Torch VIP member. I was just watching a little bit on delay AJ Styles during that commercial break tell Shane McMahon how many people are in the Money in the Bank ladder match, because Shane told AJ there's four others, and AJ goes, five. Also, I don't know how Shane's wife is going to feel about the way that he looked at Lana when Lana showed up on the set. He looked pretty enthralled with her. Anyway, that will do it for me. Like I said, Jason Powell from ProWrestling.net joins me his every 3-week appearance on the Midweek Flagship. It is always a great show when Jason's on. And Thursday, Alex Greenfield, ex-creative team member. So it's a real good week here with Kevin Eck, Greg Parks, Jason Powell, and Alex Greenfield. Follow us on Twitter at PW Torch, and like us on Facebook, facebook.com/PW Torch. And I've mentioned this before, I really appreciate those of you who on iTunes give us a 5-star rating and leave some kind comments about our show. It really does make a difference in terms of search returns. And, you know, there's a lot of podcasts out there, and we want people to find us who will like our show. You know, and so if you can say what it is about the live cast that you like, that can help other people. It's just doing a favor for them. Other people find a show that maybe they otherwise wouldn't have. And big thanks to TDP, who on May 27th, it's the latest review on iTunes, said, Wade Keller's an incredibly talented and intelligent journalist who's been covering wrestling for over 30 years. VIP content's well worth the money. And Wade consistently has a top-tier mix of guests, like former creative team members and wrestlers like Austin, Nash, JR, etc. Thank you, TDP, and very much, actually. Very kind words. And you can be next. So go to iTunes if you like our show. Give us a 5-star rating, and if you are willing to, leave some nice comments. And you can do the same thing on Stitcher and anywhere else podcasts allow reader or user or listener, I should say, reviews. All right. Thanks, everybody. Don't forget, go to pwtorch.com. There's original editorials and special features, breaking news. I've got the Raw ratings up, a detailed statistical breakdown with some real pertinent comparisons and trends and averages to kind of put in perspective what's going on. You can be the smartest person in your circle when it comes to what these numbers actually mean. My in-depth rundown of SmackDown, my written report with analysis is on pwtorch.com. We also have news items, including a first-time match between two longtime veterans that took place Monday. Overseas. Interesting story there. Also, the ROH hits and misses column, rising star, fading star, and the Monday night Reignsometer, week 21 of Tom Colohue's tracking Roman Reigns' ability to beat the odds and come out on top. I think if you're not a Roman Reigns fan, especially, you'll enjoy his columns. But even if you are, Tom does a really nice job with that. He's got a Twitter poll up saying, are you pro-Roman or anti-Roman? And his poll right now has 206 votes, 65%, two-thirds, just under two-thirds, say they are anti-Roman Reigns among Tom's readers. Although you could say those who are reading his column would probably be inclined to be anti-Roman Reigns, considering the kind of snarky tone of the sardonic tone of how Tom presents Roman Reigns' weekly struggle to overcome that the booking to try to be a star. So anyway, lots of good stuff. Go check it out. That's pwtorch.com. I'm really proud of what we put out on that website. And as always, if you attend a wrestling event, please email us notes and results, whether it's a taping, tell us what happens off air that we didn't see, dark matches before and after, or main event matches, whatever. And if you attend a house show, ROH, NXT, whatever it is, WWE, of course, indie show, send us results. If you've got an indie show coming to your area or you're a fan of a local indie promotion, you can send us an upcoming lineup and also results after the show. And it could make the site, and I might mention it on the VIP Wade Keller Hotline, where I mention have an indie note of the day at the end of every day's Monday through Friday news afternoon news update. Don't forget that news update. It's something you can listen to on your way home from work if you're in the United States before you go to sleep, if you're in the UK, and as you wake up if you are in Australia. And we have subscribers worldwide, and we'd love for you to become a VIP member. So check out details, pwtorch.com/govip. Steve Austin was my guest on last Thursday's livecast, so if you missed that, or 2 weeks ago, excuse me. If you missed that, check it out. That was 2 weeks ago. Last week was just incredible. PJ Polacco updating his situation. He's been through some rough times. He talked about that. He also talked about Extreme Rules, in particular, which matches he liked, which ones he didn't that were gimmick matches. And he talked about the magic of a cane and how to when a cane hurts and when it doesn't, and the technique involved there. Some interesting insight from a wrestler's perspective. You can find all of our back interviews, all of our past interviews at our homepage, pwtorchlivecast.com. And on that note, I'll sign off for today. Thanks, everybody. We'll talk to you tomorrow.